Music by Bach is arranged by Charles Gounod and performed by cellist Maya Beiser. Who is the pianist on here?
Michael Harrison.
Michael Harrison, who's also the composer of most of the music on this latest CD from Maya Beiser called Time Loops. And more on that name in a moment because it's pertinent to the music you just heard. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And on the program today, coming up, I'll be talking with the wonderfully eclectic pianist Christopher O'Reilly, who's going to be performing at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield tomorrow night. And he makes a point of, among many other things, doing his own takes on a lot of rock and pop musicians, some of whom are really prominent folks and some a little on the esoteric side. We'll hear from him coming up at about 4:30. Cellist Maya Beiser is going to be performing on Saturday at the Krannert Center in Urbana, part of an interesting premiere called Labyrinth, which was commissioned by the Krannert Center, where they'll be doing this, of course. And it's a two-part piece composed by Paola, I'm losing her name here.
Prestini.
And the first part of the piece is actually performed by somebody other than Maya Beiser. Her portion is called Room Number 35, and she is my guest this portion of the show. Thanks very much for coming in.
Happy to be here, Kevin.
I've got so many pieces of paper in front of me, and I lose track a little bit. Of course, we started out with something that's in a way, it's a little misleading, and I just thought I'd give our listeners an idea of what the purest sound of your cello is like. In some of the purest music that one could really hear, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's great. And I actually don't think it's quite misleading because it's, in a way, that was my point of departure. That's my background. That's where I come from, is the core classical repertoire. So that's my departure. And from there, I moved to where I am today, which is doing a lot of different kind of things, exploring all kinds of possibilities on my instrument. But I think the one perhaps, not misleading, but a little bit of a different take with this particular track that you heard is that the piano is tuned in just intonation, meaning that it's not tuned in tempered intonation. The octaves are not exactly, so it's, we've sort of altered Bach in some very almost imperceptible way, but it makes it, it allows the cello to kind of shimmer because it allows the natural harmonics of the instrument to just naturally exist without having to alter the intonation. So,
now that's a conversation I'd really like to have with somebody sometime, just because it's, as a classically trained musician myself, it's something I've always heard of, but never have had somebody sit down and say, "No, here's an instrument tuned in the well-tempered way," which is what came about around Bach's time, I guess, and then just intonation, and there's like two or three other kinds of intonation, but that really is a whole other conversation.
It is, yeah.
But regarding your classical roots, I assume you just started in the way that most classical cellists start with. You learn all the basics, you play all of the standard concertos, learn standard concertos and sonatas and so forth. Has that been the case for you? And did you start performing that way?
Yeah, I think my personal background is rather unique. I grew up in an Argentinian kibbutz in Israel, to a French mother and an Argentinian father. So happened that my kibbutz was just very musically inclined, and so everybody started to play an instrument at early age. And it was discovered very early on that I had a gift for that, and I had perfect pitch and all that kind of stuff. So they offered me to play the violin, and I just really wanted to play the cello because nobody else played the cello. And I was a rebel from day one, so I chose the one instrument. But I also was really attracted to the human quality of the cello. So I started to play it, and then I started to perform at a very early age. I was discovered by Isaac Stern when I was 12, who became my mentor. And yes, as you said, I learned all the, you know, the scales and the main concertos, and, you know, started to perform throughout my teenage years, and purely and strictly played classical music until I came to, I went to Yale University, I came here, and at that point I went through sort of a personal transformation in my own artistic, you know, way. And I just felt that I wanted to do something that nobody else has done with the instrument. And I wanted to expand the possibilities of the instrument. And I wanted to find a way to connect it to my generation and to all the music that I love, not just classical music. So from there on, I went to explore a lot of different things, create a lot of collaborations, both musically, visually, with a lot of different artists, creating multimedia performances, collaborating on film scores, and a lot of other kind of stuff.
Well, I thought since we started with the Bach Gounod Ave Maria, perhaps we sort of to ease our listeners into some of what can happen when you have collaborations and sort of push the boundaries, I guess. Mm-hmm. On this recording called Time Loops, there is this piece called Time Loops, which has everything to do with the piece we just heard, more or less.
Right. So we thought, well, what happens if we just take that gorgeous piece of Bach, Gounod, and reverse it? And so since I like to do a lot of things that is both organic but also involves electronics, we literally reverse it, and we loved it so much that we ended up releasing it as part of the album, and that's what you're going to hear. So it's a piece that's called Time Loops, and it's basically the Ave Maria in reverse. Thank you.
And there it ends. It's Michael Harrison and Maya Beiser's take on the Bach Uno Ave Maria, and performed by Maya Beiser on the cello and Michael Harrison. Actually, she was just telling me that there is a piano in there.
Yes, and there is a piano.
And somehow makes this organ-like sound along with your own layered cello sound.
Right, because it's literally the tape being played backwards. That's what's creating all these
that's fabulous.
Sounds.
So that comes off of the CD named after that piece, which is Time Loops. And this is your most recent?
Mm-hmm.
Maya is going to be playing at the Krannert Center Saturday night, part of what's called the Labyrinth Installation. And I have my full info right in front of my nose. Labyrinth Installation Concertos, House of Solitude, is the first of the pieces, which is going to be played by Cornelius. Do you know, does he say Dufalo or Dufayo? Do you know?
Dufalo.
Dufalo, a violinist. And then Maya's portion, which is called Room Number 35. And it's not just the two of them. It's a further collaboration between, of course, Paolo Prestini is the composer, but then there's also visuals involving, among other people, the University of Illinois was called eDream, Emerging Digital Research and Education in Arts Media Institute. Somebody had to work hard at that one,
yeah.
I think. And is this, why don't you describe the piece? I mean, I could just read what I have in front of me. I haven't seen the piece, but I'm curious if this is a real extension of everything you've been doing, or is it a part?
Yeah,
of it?
I mean, what I do is I have a vision for something that I want to do, and then I kind of go after it, and I think who are the best people to collaborate with. In this case, it was a little bit of both. Paolo Prestini is a wonderful young composer, half Italian, who grew up on the border with Mexico, and has got this really great sensibility. She actually approached me and wanted to know if I wanted to do something with her, so we started talking about ideas. And we ended up involving and collaborating another Mexican artist, visual artist by the name of Erica Harsh. And the three of us basically brainstormed for the better part of a year just about what to do. And we ended up loosely basing this piece on writing of Anais Nin, who is one of my favorite writers. And also, it's inspired by video art from the 1970s. So what this piece is really sort of telling a narrative of a woman who's trying to find her voice. But it's in a rather abstract way. The images are absolutely stunning. And the music is really moving and beautiful, I think. And at the very end of the piece, I'm actually going to end up playing on the cello that was designed by Erica Harsh, which has LED panels on it, and which projects her images, her art, on an LED, on the LED panels, and they're attached to my cello. And what we've done with eDreams actually is that we've worked on the interactivity between how the images on the cello and on the scrims around me are going to react to my playing. And so there's quite a bit of technology, but ultimately what I'm hoping is that people will just be there and will just be really moved by the beauty of the music, the beauty of the images. I think it's a very beautiful piece.
And are the LEDs, are the sensors that are attached to your cello, is that also then attached to the bow?
No. There is actually Neil, you know, who is the violinist who's performing in the first half of the show. He's playing on a bow that has Bluetooth technology. So there's quite a bit of technology in this. And his, so that's a whole other thing. So his bow triggers some sensors that reacts to some other things, but that's not in the case in this piece. No, this piece is really, is a different thing, but it's a full theatrical experience. And I got to say, I'm the only person the audience is going to see on stage, but there are about 20 people behind the scene who's been involved with this. So it's quite a team we have here, and we've been working here for a week building this piece, and I'm so grateful to the Granert for commissioning this and taking, you know, the kind of risks that it does, you know, me to commission such a thing. I think it's just great. So.
Well, they've gotten into the habit of doing things like that. You know, yeah. We've had lots of different sort of installation pieces, mm-hmm. or a combination of music and visuals and
right,
so on.
Right.
So this is a part of.
In fact,
part of
I premiered my first big multimedia piece, which was World to Come, which was partially commissioned by the Granert along with Carnegie Hall for the inauguration of season of Zankel Hall at Carnegie Hall in 2003. So that was the last time I was here. And I played that here. I premiered it here. So
a history of collaborations,
yeah,
between you and the Granert Center. Right. Well, we have a recording of a part of the piece you're going to be doing tomorrow, of course. So much of it is absent because we only have the sound part here.
We only
this
have the
was
sound.
In a rehearsal.
Right. And we only have the sound. And I got to just say, this is not a commercially released recording. This is literally just a rehearsal recording from a rehearsal that we did in New York. But I think it would be good for folks to just hear a little bit, just to get an idea,
yeah,
of what the piece is about. There's cello and there's pre-recorded cellos as well. So everything is, and there's some electronic tracks. But so you'll hear all of that, and everything is coming from my cello in one way or another.
So it's just a fraction of what it's about, a 45-minute piece.
Correct.
Called Room Number 35. The music's by Paola Prestini. The performance by Maya Beiser. And who's operating electronics, do we even know in this one?
Well, the sound engineer is Dave Cook. But, I mean, the electronics all come from, you know, directly, you know, it's all integrated
from
within
the
cello, yeah.
Thank you.
a fraction of a piece called Room Number 35, music by Paola Prestini, and performance by cellist Maya Beiser, who's my guest on Live and Local. She's going to be playing the complete work as part of what's called the Labyrinth Installation Concertos. The first part of it will be played by violinist Cornelius Dufalo, and it's going to be quite a visual experience, as you heard Maya was describing it just a moment ago. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from the Meredith Foundation dedicated to supporting the musical arts in performance and presentation. So that concert is Saturday night, 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana, and it's a world premiere, so that's always exciting. And that's as much as we get. You know, people have to go see it, really, because this is just a part of the experience.
Yeah.
We wanted to go out with a piece that that you've had a lot to do with the creation of a particular version of it. It's by an Argentinian. Well, you said you were born and raised in an Argentinian kibbutz, and this here is an Argentinian Jewish composer named Osvaldo Golijov, who has written some fabulous music.
Right. In fact, Osvaldo and I share a very similar history. He was also raised in Argentina and then moved to Israel. And we both met here in the United States. And when he and I met, it was before he was as well-known as he is today, but I've fell in love with his music, and I've commissioned a piece from him. And he ended up writing this piece called Marielle, which I've recorded on my World to Come album. The original version was for cello and marimba, and then I made a version for pre-recorded cello and pre-recorded tracks. So what you will hear is the solo cello part with a quartet of cellos, all of whom I'm playing, accompanying myself.
Who is Marielle?
Marielle is a friend of Osvaldo who died in an accident. And so when he started to write the piece for me, she died, and so he dedicated the piece to her. And she loved the coast of Brazil, and he incorporated some beautiful Brazilian melodies in the piece, as you will hear.
Well, we'll get to hear again just a part of it, unfortunately. A feast here of privilege for me to talk to you on this portion of our program, and coming up in just a few minutes, I'll be talking with pianist Christopher Riley, who does some similar things to you in that he incorporates other elements of mm-hmm. non-classical music, so
yes.
to speak, into yeah. his activity. It's tomorrow night, Saturday night, 7:30 at the Krannert Center. The Labyrinth Installation Concertos with Maya Beiser. And if you want more information about her, and there is a great deal to learn, it is mayabeiser.com, MayaBeiser.com. And there's probably a link on there to one of NPR's Tiny Desk concerts.
There is. That's right. I recently visited the new NPR station in Washington, D.C. I was actually the first one to perform at the new Tiny Desk.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I know there's a whole ton of them.
Yeah, I know. It's wonderful. You can definitely check that out.
Thanks very much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
beautiful, beautiful piece in my estimation by Osvaldo Golijov. Just a part of it's called Marielle, and Maya Beiser playing cellos in this case from her CD called World to Come here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Stay tuned next for a conversation with pianist Christopher O'Reilly, who is going to be playing at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. And, well, this is Chris. Music by Bernard Herrmann, as you probably recognize from the film Vertigo, the prelude, from a CD called Shuffle, Play, Listen. It came out a few years ago by pianist Christopher O'Reilly with cellist Matt Heimovitz. Christopher O'Reilly will be at the Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield tomorrow night for a concert at 8 o'clock on their Kitchen Sink series. He also hosts the wonderful program called From the Top on NPR, and he's my guest on Live and Local. Thanks very much for joining us.
Pleasure to be with you.
So, From the Top, a wonderful show, of course, where kids of all ages come on and display their considerable talent, and you have a marvelous rapport with them. Just tell me a little bit about how you got involved in that before we launch into some of the music you'll be doing at your concert.
Well, I was approached as an alum of New England Conservatory of Music by the two executive producers of From the Top, Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley Wales. Jerry was or is a member of the board of trustees at New England Conservatory and had had some experience touring the preparatory division orchestra at NEC and got to know firsthand what it's like to really give all of your energies to a larger enterprise than just oneself, and so really felt that there was a lot to be said for giving attention to young musicians in the same way that we tend to lavish attention on pre-collegiate gymnasts and things like that when the time arises. So he had the idea of the show, and Jordan Hall, the main performing hall of New England Conservatory, had just received its historical landmark status and gotten a facelift, and so they asked me to host this program, and so we've been on the air for 15 years now.
You made a reference to pre-college gymnasts, which itself is, of course, a non-musical reference, sort of stretching that a little bit. Of course, you're, for lack of a better term, a classical pianist, but it's been a long-time interest of yours to incorporate non-classical music into your repertoire. How did that get started?
Well, I suppose it started rather early on. I was always studying as a classical pianist, but around sixth or seventh grade, I figured out that girls weren't so impressed with Liszt Hungarian Rhapsodies, and they might be a little bit more impressed with, you know, Iron Butterfly and The Doors and things like that. So I started a little rock band, and so I've always been somewhat interested in popular music. That interest led me into jazz and jazz rock, such that I chose New England Conservatory as a place to go to school simply because at that point I wanted to pursue both. I was playing jazz professionally when I was finishing high school in Pittsburgh, and playing at a regular club date there on the weekends. But when I got to New England Conservatory, I realized that my jazz vocabulary really needed to be more well steeped in tradition, and so I was really going to have to reinvent the wheel, relearn how to ride a bicycle. And I, at that point, I felt that it was more challenging to reinvigorate the classical repertoire in my own voice, and that it was more demanding, and so I was up for the challenge. And so that's when I sort of hit the straight and narrow. It was actually because of From the Top initially being designed as a forum for all kinds of musicians, but we were sort of smacked down by our classical constituents, and you know, any jazz on the program would be reason for our being dismissed from the broadcast schedule. So it was sort of my way of playing an arrangement at the halfway point, which everyone presumed was a classical piece because I'm a classical pianist, but as our announcer would post-announce the pieces, you know, saying that was our host Christopher O'Reilly playing Karma Police by Radiohead, and subsequent to that got lots of email into the program, one of which said, who is this Mr. Head and where can I find more of his beautiful music? So I felt it was a good way of juxtaposing different genres and living by the Duke Ellington adage that there are only two kinds of music, good music and the other kind, which also presumes a train of thought and a decision in one's own mind as performer to perform what one believes in, and from an audience to not prejudge based on genre or market pressure what is deemed to be good, except for the evidence of one's own ears and one's heart. So that's how that came to be.
Well, let me play from one of your more recent CDs. This actually is, I guess, a few years ago now. It's called Out of My Hands, and this is a Radiohead tune called All I Need. Christopher O'Reilly performing it here. He's going to be playing in Springfield tomorrow night. He's my guest on Live and Local. All I Need, the name of the tune, by Radiohead, as, well, I guess, is it would it be correct to say that this is your transcription or arrangement or interpretation of the tune, Christopher O'Reilly?
Jazz player friend of mine, John Hassell, liked to coin the term for these pieces, reimaginings. And so when I put out my Radiohead book of piano arrangements, it was, you know, True Love Waits, Radiohead reimagined for the piano. So that's a little bit of a mouthful, but it was very kind of him to decide that's what they were. And of course, Elliott Smith's parents have been vocal, they're friends of mine, and they say, well, you know, you should give yourself a lot more credit for the composing that goes into these pieces. And so they've been very enthusiastic and encouraging of my actual compositional forays. But yeah, I think it's safe to call them arrangements.
What is your approach when you take? Well, first I have to say that I personally had never heard of Radiohead until the name came out of your mouth. I don't know if it was on through From the Top or from Performance Today, where I think you've played some. And I've just listened to a little bit since, but I've had many classical musicians say, oh, you should really listen to Radiohead and you'll enjoy that. Mm-hmm. What is their appeal for you particularly? And then when you take a song of theirs or of Elliott Smith's or Kurt Cobain or whoever, how do you decide what to take from it?
Well, the first part of your question really has to do with the kind of left brain aspect of some of popular music. I mean, I think Radiohead is a very good example of a band that's not really, you know, monotone in terms of its texture. Every song that they do is normally has a thread contributed to it by each member of the five-piece ensemble. They're not really an art rock band. I mean, I don't think any but one of them really knows how to read music, for that matter. But it's just that sense of counterpoint, really, and sort of a natural counterpoint that makes it interesting fodder for piano transcription, in the same way that I think the piano is the best and most capable instrument of emulating a symphony orchestra by reason of our ability to weave a contrapuntal texture. I think classical musicians are drawn to that kind of more intricately designed music, as opposed to the rather largely technical types of popular music that are rampant today. So when I set out to make an arrangement, it's usually a matter of necessity. It's usually a song that I've started listening to obsessively, and then around the 500th time, I think, well, there's that guitar line, or the way the bass and drums diverge, particularly in All I Need. You have a very different sort of rhythmic hierarchy with the bass and drums than you do with the guitar, and I found that very interesting. So that is sort of the thread that leads you into bringing in the melody and harmony, but usually it's a voice, it's a thread in the weave that I start out with.
I guess similar question, since you mentioned piano's ability to and maybe ideal suitability to recreating orchestral music. You have a very recent CD out called O'Reilly's List, reference to Franz Liszt, who was a great transcriber of other people's music for the piano. He was a wonderful virtuoso and showing off literally in that way sometimes. And you have Berlioz's complete Symphonie Fantastique as arranged, transcribed by Liszt on that program, on that CD. Can you elaborate a little bit more why piano is best suited to the orchestra? Because on one hand, it's sort of a monochromatic instrument, and that, you know, that each key hits a string, and it's makes an extra challenge, I would think.
Well, it does, except the subtitle of the Symphonie Fantastique is Portrait of a Young Artist, and so the idea of having a protagonist in one person makes it already more attractive than having, you know, 80 or 90 people, you know, sweating away at that score. Berlioz, it was essentially an autobiographical work, although it wasn't obviously mentioned that way. But I first learned the transcription as accompaniment to a underwater puppet ballet performed by Basil Twist and his puppeteers in a sort of a large aquarium tank flanked by black curtains and accompanied in the background and the backstage area by, you know, scaffolding and six puppeteers in wetsuits maneuvering pieces of fabric and great lighting to a complete choreography of the Symphonie Fantastique. They had been using Ormandy's very lively recording from years ago, but at the Ravinia Festival and then subsequently at a few other venues, we were able to have the piano directly under the aquarium tank, so it was looking like the music and the images were really coming out of the piano itself. And so it was really quite a dramatic and effective way of performing the piece. And so I decided to record it. It's a massive undertaking. There are, I think, appropriate to my skills, if you want to call them that. There were lots of places where Liszt said, oh, you know, by the way, you know, there's this other stuff going on in the orchestra, but I don't really have any foggy idea of how to incorporate it in two hands. There's quite a lot of that in the second movement, in the first movement, some places in the fourth movement. So I've done quite a lot of rearranging and actually making things more complex than they were in Liszt's own version. But so it was a challenge and one that I, you know, relished, and I've enjoyed performing the symphony quite a lot.
Well, let's give a listen to the second movement. It's called A Ball, and Symphonie Fantastique. Music by Berlioz, transcribed by Franz Liszt, further arranged by Christopher Riley, who plays it here on Live and Local, and he'll be performing in Springfield, a concert tomorrow night. More on that in a moment.
Thank you.
It's called a ball, as in a dance at a party of sorts, from Symphony Fantastique by Hector Berlioz, Franz Liszt transcription, and Christopher Riley's retake on that. He's my guest this portion of Live and Local. On your recital tomorrow night, can folks expect a mix of the sort that we've been playing on the program today?
Yes, quite a mix. I'd say probably close to half and half. It'll also include a brand new arrangement that I've done. Part of the reason I don't like having printed programs for my concerts is because a printed program makes it compulsory to stick with that despite one's contemporary and immediate enthusiasms. So in light of the late passing of Lou Reed, I have arranged one of the songs that he wrote for the Velvet Underground called All Tomorrow's Parties. So that'll be on the program tomorrow, as well as lots of stuff from all of my recorded repertoire.
So when you say half and half, meaning half straight classical and half other things, or is
yes.
that not what you meant?
Yes, I think that's a fair estimate. I don't actually keep them separate by halves, but in terms of, you know, the cumulative material, it gets interwoven, I hope, nicely. I mean, so on the second half, you'll have the song by Elliott Smith called True Love, and then following that, The Truest Love, the Prelude and Liebestod from Tristan and Isolde. Mm-hmm. So it all falls together nicely, I think.
Yeah, and that one also on that O'Reilly's List
yeah.
CD. You mentioned Elliott Smith a couple of times, and you also have a recording of music by Nick Drake.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these gentlemen, as I understand it, suffered majorly from depression and died perhaps because of that quite mm-hmm. young.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something somehow that you gravitate to, you know, mm-hmm. Musicians who have some sort of mental complexity of that sort? Or is that coincidental?
I think of it as a more full and rich emotional palette. I think you have to go back to the South Park character Butters, who who was, you know, sort of depressed because he found out that the waitress at Hooters, well, it wasn't Hooters there; it was called Raisins on South Park, and he realizes that she's just being nice to him. Because she wants to get bigger tips, and then when he's confronted in similar depression by Kyle, his friend, Butter says, "Well, you know, I don't think it's so bad. I mean, you know, if I didn't feel this bad, I wouldn't be able to feel that good on the other end of it." And I think Elliott Smith is the perfect example of that type of character who was just open in his performance and in his composing to the full range of human experience, no matter how dark and no matter how ecstatic. So I think I certainly am drawn to that. It might just be, you know, me being Irish, but I think there is something to that.
Well, let's listen to, let's go out with a tune by Elliott Smith. It's called New Disaster. Anything about this that should be said before we hear it?
Well, I was reading Alex Ross's book, The Rest is Noise, and he took great care in talking a lot about John Sibelius. And in New Disaster, as in the Sibelius symphonies, there's a pretty nice and intricate reflection on the functionality of the third, major or minor, the two sides of a triad. They actually coexist. I mean, the bottom third of a major triad is a major third. The top half is a minor third. So there's sort of a dichotomy even within one major or minor chord. And so there's a lot of that type of Sibelius play in New Disaster.
Let's give it a listen. Elliott Smith's New Disaster from Christopher O'Reilly's CD, Out of My Hands. He will be playing at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield and the Studio Theater there tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. For more information on Christopher O'Reilly, I believe that's just the website, christopheroreilly.com, isn't it?
That's right.
And in Sangamon Auditorium, you can Google and get their complete ticket information. Thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
Pleasure speaking with you. See you tomorrow.
music by Elliott Smith, as re-realized, I guess, by Christopher O'Reilly, the pianist. It's called New Disaster from Chris's CD, Out of My Hands, from 2009. He'll perform at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. I'm Kevin Kelly. This has been Live and Local. Appreciate you joining us today. On tomorrow's program, we will welcome the Chinese New Year with some performances by some very young instrumentalists and singers as well. Also, we'll talk with and hear from a number of musicians playing music by the late Peter Michailov. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL-FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. It's 36 degrees at 5 o'clock.